and welcome to the latest instalment of Critical Eye's Inspiring Leaders podcast. My name is Jacob Ambrose Wilson, Senior Editor at Critical Eye, and I have three guests here with me at the 2024 Growth Company Retreat. So I'm really pleased to be joined by Brittany Harris, who co-founded Qualis Flow, or Qflow for short. She did that in 2018 with fellow construction professional Jade Cohen. So Brittany is CEO of the business, which is on a mission to help construction teams build more efficiently and responsibly. And Qflow is now engaged across the UK, Australia and the US market. We also have Mark Whitby here with us, who holds a selection of NED and chair roles, including with education tech company Biblio. Biblio has developed a modern e-textbooks platform that integrates fully with library and university systems. Mark is chair at Biblio and also a Critical Eye board mentor. Finally, we're joined by Melanie Lane, who was, until recently, CEO of Shell Recharge, which is a venture business acquired by Shell that's been providing EV solutions across Europe. And Melanie will start her next role as CEO of EV charging firm Podpoint on May the 1st. Okay, so let me get into this then. I'd like to start by asking each of you where your respective priorities lie at present. So in Critical Eye's 2023 research on growth companies, customer focus actually jumped to the top of the priority list. Retaining key talent was in there at second, and in third we had M&A. So Brittany, I'll come to you first. As CEO of a high growth and scaling business, what are you focused on at present?
So we are focused very closely on customers at the moment. In fact, we always have been. It was very much in the core of how Qflow was founded, was we're very problem first company. How do we solve the problem of the industry? The tech is very secondary. We leverage AI and machine learning and all the sexy things, but we never talk about that to customers. It's all about their pain and how we address that. Now, the construction industry is going through some painful moments at the moment as a result of inflation and a lot of uncertainty. So we've got a really big focus on, firstly, understanding how have their pains evolved over time and what is their core focus, and how do we lower that barrier to adoption? Because with Qflow's core focus being on, you know, delivering a more sustainable construction industry, we can only do that if we're really adding value and providing a return on investment to them. So unpicking how sustainability is that secondary outcome. It's the outcome of being more profitable, being more efficient, being more productive on site. And that really requires us to get under the hood of their workflows and how we help to automate, accelerate, and ultimately provide the important bits of information so they can drive that change.
Thank you, Brittany. Melanie, I'll come to you now. You left Shell Recharge not so long ago. And as I mentioned, you're about to take on a new CEO position. Clearly, it's a tougher operating environment for CEOs at the moment. But what for you are the essential elements to have in place to really drive high performance?
Thanks. So, I'm all about learning at the moment and just thinking through the market that I work in and that I have worked in for the last few years is very nascent, very disrupted. There's a lot of change. There's a lot of different players. And so being really clear-minded on what is the path of this entity forward, what is the unique selling proposition, what is the kind of the space in the market that they're going to occupy in the midst of all this kind of ambiguity is kind of really where the focus is. So that what you can do for the organization is give real clarity of vision, real clarity of, you know, the how-to, the strategy, and focus. So it's very easy with these organizations that are growing very fast to have way too many priorities, to be diversifying in lots of different places. So I think really being focused is a table stake. I think the other kind of piece for me, if you assume that those aspects are really your right to play, I think the other pieces that I'm looking to bring to the table then is around you know, processes and ways of working that can help an organization operate at scale. Mm-hmm. So it's fine to, you know, have a great idea, and it's fine to, you know, have a proof of concept, and even to have, you know, a couple hundred thousand customers, but to get to millions, you need, you know, you need scalability. And the flip side of the process is capability. You can have, you know, again, all the processes in the world, but you need some really good capabilities in the organization. Once you've got those two things, as a leadership team, you can start to look at the future. You can start to look at the horizon and, you know, kind of be a bit more forward focused.
Mm, capabilities and scaling. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Mark, if I can come to you now and ask from your lens as a chair and also a non-executive director, where are the pressure points for CEOs that you're seeing at the moment?
I would say cash. I think the current environment and for the last 18 months, the focus towards the sustainability, certainly of the businesses I operate with in that private market scale-up space, has moved quite quickly away from growth, which remains important, to cash and the long-term funding of the business and capitalization of it. And so with that comes a focus, I think, much more on the bottom line and profit and sustainable profit for the business to sustain it. Given the cost of borrowing, given the difficulty of raising more cash, and some of those complexities, that really is the highest priority, I would say, we talk about at the board meetings I'm involved in, and I talk to colleagues outside about. So cash equaling the ability, the run rate, the cash burn for the business to sustain itself. And if it's pre-profit, which certainly a couple of my companies are, is getting to break even and getting to sustainability. That's the biggest focus, and therefore the biggest priority for the CEOs I'm working with at the moment, I would say. Mm. Growth is secondary now to that, and growth remains important. But at the moment, we're certainly talking to the CEOs in terms of planning the current year, you know, the conversation comes down to, well, if it was the classic trade-off between the two, we'll take profit over growth right now, every day of the week. And I think that's also reflected with our investors, who obviously sit on the board with me. I think understanding that the path to profit and then sustaining that profit gives a far better chance that the outcomes for those businesses can be achieved from an investor point of view, as well as for management and for the employees. So that would be the pressure point. I think all other pressure points that have historically existed for CEOs continue. And I think, I'm sure we're going to talk about it more, but, you know, I still look at the CEO position and think everyone wants a piece of the CEO. You know, they are the most critical piece, right in the middle of that wheel. And that creates fantastic opportunity, but pressures as well for the CEOs.
Mm. Brittany, is that something that resonates with you in terms of those cost pressures and also a focus on growth maybe being secondary at the moment?
Yeah, certainly. So we're in the fortunate position that we raised last year, and so we have enough cash in the business to not be worrying about fundraising right now or needing to recapitalise. But we did talk extensively with the board that when we raised, we had this plan around growth, and we've actually reassessed that to be a plan around what we call burn multiples. So how much are we burning over how much are we bringing in, and trying to optimize around that. So we're not dead set hard focused on hitting profitability as our main priority. We're not cutting the team in half to do that, which I know a lot of companies are, but we are also reining back our spend significantly so that we've got a really tight control over how much is going out in comparison to how much is coming in, and making sure that we really focus on keeping that runway as long as possible, and that burn multiple looks really compelling as we go through this process.
Okay, thank you. So, Mark, you mentioned, you know, everybody wants a piece of the CEO at the moment. So, Melanie, I'd like to come to you and ask if you can cast your mind back to when you first stepped into a CEO role. What did you wish you'd known, and what was the hardest aspect of the role to adjust to?
Yeah, so I think the first time I stepped into the CEO role, it was a slightly different context because you had a major backer in the mothership. So, you know, Shell was 100% owner of the company, which is different to the kind of scenario I'm stepping into now. In that context, where the funding for the organisation was, you know, pretty secure, the things that I look back on now, one was about focus, you know, really just ruthless focus. Particularly with that setup, there was the distraction or the possibility to do lots of different things and lots of different stakeholders wanting lots of different things developed. So ruthless focus. I think this piece around, I call them teenage companies, that, you know, that they're growing, and their infrastructure needs to, you know, change in order to allow that growth. So they're constrained by their internal operating systems. Investing in that spine, or, you know, having a spine that is actually capable of, you know, serving, you know, so many customers with certain propositions is so important. And if you don't get it right, it doesn't matter how much innovation you put out, if you can't then pick up the phone and deal with a customer query or get an invoice paid, or do you know what I mean? Like, those things are fundamental. So I think just the, you know, really understanding the criticality of your spine. And the third thing I didn't know really was just about the depth of capability. And so as a leadership team, as a CEO and your CEO minus one, your capacity is constrained to some extent in proportion to the capability at the next level down. And so building, you know, deeper muscle, you can have a brilliant C-suite, but actually if you haven't got capabilities deeper in the organization, you spend a lot of your time hands-on, firefighting, fixing things, and you know, you're less able to kind of lift your head up and steer for the future. So that capability piece, I think, was also something that I learned as I went.
Yeah, okay. Brittany, if we go back to your first steps as a CEO, obviously you were also involved as a founder. So, you know, as a company grows, how difficult is it to evolve as a founder CEO? And did you find your leadership style needing to change to match that growth?
It's a lovely question in terms of it sort of forces you to reflect a lot. And I think it was the things that I didn't know that made sure I went and did it. Actually, I think ignorance is bliss. And if you'd known exactly what you were taking on, you may not choose to do that. Certainly, the role changes every 3 to 6 months. In those very early stages, you're doing absolutely everything. And as you build a team underneath you and you start segmenting, you're having to learn a completely new career every 6 months. I think that's one of the things that I love most about the role, and the thing that gets me so excited, and being able to be so focused on that sort of core mission of decarbonising construction is the thing that just gets you up every day, even when it's really hard. I have definitely relied heavily on other founders who have gone before me and have learnt the painful way, and I've very much tried to avoid some of those pains, but some of them you have to learn by going through it as well, and you can't avoid all things. Some of the more sort of frustrating ones around having to let go amazing people in the team just because you've outgrown them as a company is something that I think I wasn't ever prepared for, no matter how much I'd heard people talk about it, until you go through it and you have to think about the right way to execute on that and when to do it. Certainly something that we've learned and progressed on significantly over the last sort of 3 years has been the way that we build and run our board. Only up until about 18 months ago did we get a chair, so otherwise I was chairing, and it's been so lovely to hand that over to someone, and it's completely transformed the board dynamic, and it's now an incredibly strong and highly functioning board in my eyes, and I greatly enjoy the sort of various different inputs and the perspectives that they bring, and it's created a really positive, open, transparent and very trusting community where we're able to sort of challenge each other very effectively. But that wasn't always the case. Mm-hmm. And it's taken time and learning the hard way to do that. So definitely leaning on others to hear their experience, but also ultimately figuring it out as you go is the way to go about it.
Yeah, and Mark, I think it's a good place to bring you in here. Have you had experience working with first-time CEOs, and where do you think a chair can really provide support and guidance?
Yeah, great question. I have. And I mean, let me start by saying just the admiration I have for any first-time chair stroke founder, any first-time CEO stroke founder. You know, I never had the opportunity, and probably more relevantly, the guts to go and do that, right, and set up a business and be that person. So, you know, I'm kind of living that life through now, supporting CEOs and seeing their journey and watching from the sidelines. But in terms of, you know, your question and the first-time CEO, I'm lucky enough to work with one at the moment and have worked with others in the past, and they're super inspirational and give me huge energy and insight. And in terms of how I see the role, someone else said this before, and so I'm going to steal it with dignity, hopefully. If the founder is the kind of parent of the business, then the non-exec, and particularly the chair, can be a godparent. And okay. I kind of like that, because I thought it kind of had a good feel to what your role is. I think for that founder CEO, you're really there to be a critical friend, an observer, a support, an independent set of eyes, and someone who can also provide advice which would not necessarily be obvious to the CEO at a point in time. So you have, of course, the benefit of distance, and you have the benefit of being objective and impartial, but you're only impartial up to a point, because you very quickly get vested in the business and its success and the individual that you're supporting. So you have quite a strong tie. So I would say it's what I hope I bring is a number of things, but I guess it's that objectivity, that sounding board, you know, that phone call that sort of says, what do you think I should do in this situation? Or how should I handle this? Or I've got these two conflicting priorities. What, you know, have you any thoughts on how I could resolve them? And when I'm going through a process with a potential new role with a CEO, I always say to them, look, the key test of this is, how are you going to feel at 5 o'clock in the evening when your phone rings and you see it's me calling? All right, and I need you to think, oh, okay, cool, that's Mark. But by the way, that's got to work the other way. When my phone rings and I see it's you calling me at 5, and I want to say, oh, great, hey, how are you doing? So it's that kind of relationship. In the end, there is a formalness to the relationship, and of course, there's governance around it, and at certain times you have to deal with difficult situations. But virtually all of the time, it is about support, guidance, direction, insight to the best extent I can.
Yeah, and how does the chair's role vary by the ownership structure of the business?
A bit. Only in the, for me, in the sense of the where the owners are in the room. So if you're looking at a PE or a VC-backed business, clearly you have investors at the table, literally. Mm-hmm. And so I think your role as a chair is to make sure you are supporting and representing their views if you're independent, and making sure that that is balanced, and that you're managing the interests of the executive team with the investors appropriately. I'm chair of a family-owned business where the original founder is still the owner of the business. So that in that stakeholder relationship is very straightforward. So it's different. So we don't spend nearly as much time talking about, you know, managing the investor and the long-term investment plan for the business, because we don't need to. So in that sense, I don't have to allocate time to that in that role, whereas in others, the investor management is a piece. But overall, if I look at what is expected of me and what I wanted to deliver into those businesses, the vast majority of it is comparable across those businesses, I would say.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Mark. It's often said that the CEO role is a lonely one. So I want to ask each of you, can that be overstated, or do you find it to be true? And Melanie, I'll come to you first.
I think it can be lonely to some extent, in that you have to be okay that not everybody will like you. That's come up a few times today, and they won't all like your decisions. So that you just have to be okay with, you're not going to be popular person number one all the time for all people. And I think there is a weight to the idea that the buck stops with you. That said, I find the business community amazingly supportive, and I've never known anybody to say no. If you reach out and say, could I have a cup of coffee? I'd love to learn something from you. And so I think, although you may not have it deeper within the organisation, because the buck stops with you, you've got to have that sense of, you know, maybe you're a bit distant in some respects, you can get it. And I found huge generosity in people around me in giving me advice. And I thrive in that environment, actually. So, yeah.
Brittany, have you had a similar experience in your time as a CEO?
Yeah, I'd strongly agree with Mel on that. I think it can be incredibly isolating at times, particularly when things are tough. And you, like you said, the buck stops with you, and ultimately you've got lots of bits of different information and you've got to make a decision because someone has to. I'm really fortunate that I've got a co-founder, and although she's not in the role of CEO, she's a phenomenal person for me to go to and be able to have that very close, trusted relationship to be like, right, we've got to figure this out as a team. And it's much closer than just a sort of another exec role, although also very lucky that I have this amazing exec team who I can call up anytime and we just have the best conversations. So having that support and good, strong, trusted support makes a big difference. But I would also say there's nothing quite like the bond forged in the fire of founding that comes with meeting up with other founders. And I'm at a founders retreat next week, and there's also this founding club called the CTech Club, which is just construction technology founders all dealing with the same mind-boggling frustrations of working with the construction industry, and being able to, as you said, Mel, just call them up and be like, can you help? I just don't know how to deal with this guy, or I don't know how to deal with this situation, or have you ever seen this in a contract? And just those little questions that need a 5-minute answer. And because you're all struggling against this quite challenging industry, everyone is so willing to give that time. And I personally make sure that I am giving, you know, twice as much as I take on that. And I'm always open to chatting to founders and trying to give back some of that support, because we lent on it so strongly when we were starting out. And I continue to lean on it. And it really does take away some of that isolation, just hearing, oh yeah, we've seen that 100 times, and yeah, that's really frustrating, and don't you worry, you're not going insane. Which is often the main thing I'm looking to hear from someone is, no, you're not crazy. Yes, it is that bad. So that makes a big difference.
Okay, and Mark, what's your sort of view on the perception of the lonely CEO?
I think by and large it's true. Mm. Not in the sense that all CEOs are lonely, but it can be a lonely role because, as I said earlier, everyone wants a piece of the CEO, and who do they ultimately turn to? And I think the point that was just made about when things go wrong or things aren't going well, who does the CEO turn to and who can they turn to? And I think certainly picking up on the point about having networks that the CEO can talk to, whether that's a founder network or a CEO network, and that's certainly very active in the tech space here in the UK. So that's great. And obviously, to the extent I need to encourage CEOs to take advantage of that, I would. And obviously, I would hope in most situations, as a chair, a CEO, when things get tough, can and will pick the phone up and talk to me, and I can be a sounding board and someone that is there, notwithstanding the fact, obviously, as I say, I have a formal role, but they can come to me as one of the key trusted people that they could talk to. But for sure, I think it can be a really tough role. And as I say, immense admiration for folks who are doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to talk about the value of a mentor in the context of a growth company CEO in particular. So, when can a mentor really provide insight and support that they might not be able to get from, say, example, their chair? Melanie, I'll come to you.
Yeah, so I was just thinking before about how I've used board mentors, through Critical Eye. And I think to begin with, honestly, it was therapy. I just used it. So, just straight out therapy. And it was just such a safe space to be able to process ideas and thinking, maybe before they were as well formulated as they might have needed to be, in a board context. And it just felt like there was less weight attached to that. It was a safe mm-hmm. space. I think as I've gone on, I feel more intentional about that mentoring relationship. So, seeking out people that really can you know, challenge me more. So again, still a safe space, but somebody that can really wrestle my thinking without there being any weight attached to it at all, you know. And there will always be some weight attached to it in your chair relationship, but in a kind of an independent mentor, you can really, you don't have to worry about saying wrestling with things that are just still in the early stages of your thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Brittany, have you had experience with a mentor in terms of them helping?
I've certainly had different mentors for different stages of what we're doing, yeah. And I might have multiple people who I can go to at any one time for different things. So very early on, I lent on a good friend who was also a founder for really weird, stupid questions like, how do you build a cash flow model? Because being a civil engineer, never done one of those before.
Yeah.
And so they were able to sort of talk me through those sort of very early, silly stages where you literally are just trying to figure out the basics. And then we've now progressed to the point where I don't go to him for anything other than a good chat about his love life and a pint of beer, which is also lovely. And sometimes it is just that therapy session of, because, you know, he's dealing with similar scale enterprise clients and just having a right moan about how complex and frustrating some of these things are. But now I'll go to often members in the CTEC club who are a few stages more progressed than we are and will have faced very similar challenges, like expanding into the US, and being able to go and say, right, this is how we're thinking about it, this is what I've heard from others, this is my strategy as a result, what am I missing? And really getting them to ask the challenging questions and start digging in just a little bit further, just to make sure that the thinking is robust. And often what I've found is that I come out of those sessions having not changed anything I'm doing, because we're normally pretty much on point, but I am now a lot more confident that what I'm doing is the right thing and that that has been challenged robustly, and I can then take that to the board and be like, this is our strategy. So it's having that constructive feedback to even just build confidence in your own approach.
Mark, have you got anything to add on this discussion around mentoring in a growth company context?
I see mentoring obviously as hugely valuable. I do it for Critical Eye.
Yes.
And I do see a clear distinction between the role of chairing and of being a mentor. I think as a chair, I can provide mentoring in certain areas, but I'm ultimately still a chair and I have formal responsibilities which could result in, you know, me having to make difficult decisions for a CEO in this case. Whereas when I mentor, I'm there for the sole purpose of providing input and benefit to that individual. And in most, if not all, situations, as a mentor, you're the only person in that person's life who's looking at their professional development objectively. Your partner probably is not going to be objective, right? Your employer is not going to be objective. Your chairperson might be not objective.
True.
But as a mentor, I go into those meetings with only one thing in my mind as a mentor, which is, how do I help this individual professionally continue to develop? And I think that's a really unique position and a very trusted one, which I love, and can be a very high impact one. And for the mentee, you know, as just been discussed, that may give cause for reflection. They may be able to express concerns or fears, whether it's imposter syndrome or stakeholder management, that they can't to anyone else. And know that that will be kept in the room and that the mentor will give them honest, objective feedback, but will always be in their best interests.
Okay, I think we've got time for maybe one more question. So I'll go round the table and ask this one. So Melanie, what would be your one key piece of advice to pass on to a first-time growth company CEO?
Yeah, I could probably write a book on this, but the piece of advice I'm reminding myself as I go into it is, and I'll just make it really simple, is just don't forget the five whys, you know, with everything as I go in, you know, well, why, to really deeply understand. And from that space of understanding, then I think you can, you know, make sensible decisions and you can be in good service of the entity and the people and the customers. But that curiosity and that, you know, five whys, deep understanding, I think, is what I'm reminding myself.
Thank you, Melanie. Brittany, Can I come to you?
Yeah, I think that's really important. And particularly for myself, it's knowing the core mission and being able to hold on to that. I think if you're doing something just to make money, you can do other things. It'll be a lot less painful. Really knowing why you push through the painful bits and what you're actually trying to achieve in doing this beyond just build a big business is so important. But just to sort of add on top of that, I'd also say just don't overthink it. I think particularly for women in this role, sometimes you can constantly question yourself too much. And I know I've often wondered, like, why me? How am I supposed to do this? I don't know anything. And actually, I said earlier, you know, sometimes ignorance is bliss, not overthinking it, just going in and figuring out as you go can be the very best thing. It is always helpful to have a plan and a strategy and know what you're trying to do, but don't let that stop you from taking those all important steps. And I'll say one thing that I said earlier, which is just eat the elephant a bite at a time. It's a huge thing you're trying to do, but you don't have to do it all at once. So just keep making sure you know what that next step is. Don't overthink the elephant. Just keep taking that bite.
Mark, the last word is yours.
Oh, blimey, thank you. Well, I'm going to steal someone else's quote then, because I'm not original. So it's a quote from a guy called Andy Grove. And Andy Grove was CEO when I was working at Intel many years ago. And he was an absolutely phenomenal CEO to work under. And he had a quote which I think applies pretty well, actually, in the context of a startup scale-up CEO business, which is, let chaos reign, then reign in chaos. And I think about that, about let chaos reign in terms of the creativity and the openness to new ideas and remaining keen to learn and question and quiz. Allow you and your team and those around you to see anything and everything as possible. Then rein it back in. Mm-hmm. Form a plan, have a strategy, hire a team, execute. But that doesn't mean you can't then let chaos reign again and rein it back. And it can be an ongoing iterative process. And I think being open to that level of difference can be really, really helpful and healthy for a business as it scales, because so much of your plan has to change and will need to change, and your ability to adapt and allow yourself to be flexible like that and then pull it together and then execute, I think, is key to success.
Thank you. I'm afraid that's all we have time for this episode of Critical Eyes Inspiring Leaders podcast. But thank you again to my three guests, Brittany Harris, Mark Whitby and Melanie Lane, for that really excellent discussion and for your insights on some of the challenges facing, CEOs of growth companies in the main. So thank you again. And if you do want to listen to more episodes of the Inspiring Leaders series, you can find them on Podbean or Spotify. Thank you and bye for now.